Hello, today I am in the headquarters of PwC, PricewaterhouseCoopers, in London, in Charing Cross. I'm with Michael Rendell, who's a senior partner and is responsible for innovation and transformation. Today I want to talk about artificial intelligence, because I know very little about it, but I understand it's going to change the world of technology, particularly for white-collar workers over the next 4 or 5 years. I'm not sure people appreciate it. Michael, thanks for joining me.
Pleasure.
Michael, what is artificial intelligence?
What is artificial intelligence? Well, it's a whole set of different kinds of technology that effectively are trying to get machines to replicate the way human beings think, how they reason, how they learn, how they study, how they translate issues, ideas, regulation into output, taking machines to do that in the way that you as a human being would do it, as you decide, do I go down that path or that path? What are the things that you think about when you're teaching a machine to try and do that?
And it can really do that.
It's starting to do that. There are billions and billions of neurons in our brain constantly firing, and they're kind of yes, no, plus or minus, one or zero. And slowly but surely you use all of that to make decisions based on experience, the things that you've learned, things that have happened to you before. And what's increasingly happening is you can teach machines to do a similar sort of thing. Now, it isn't thinking. It's doing the same as a human brain, but it's not doing it the way we would do it. It's taking billions and billions and billions of data points, and on the basis of those data points, making decisions.
And who's developing this? Is this something that's being developed in this country?
Everybody's in the space. You look at all the major technology players, you look at all the small technology players, the startups. The wonderful thing about this kind of technology is there's the opportunity to democratize it, because you don't need a massive infrastructure behind you to build it. You know, a clever algorithm that somebody's writing in their bedroom is as capable of producing this intelligent, apparently intelligent thought as the billions of dollars that the Googles or the Alphabets of this world are devoting to the study.
And when you say intelligent thought, I can't quite understand what you mean there. Can you simplify it for somebody like me?
I'm probably struggling. We're talking about a massively complex field of computer science. Intelligent thinking, is that what we're talking about? No, it's more about taking lots and lots and lots of data, lots of historical data, lots of data points, and based on those, making a decision as to what the right or the wrong answer is. What's a great example of that? Imagine you've got a car park.
Yep.
And you want to know, is somebody trying to break into cars in that car park? So you could teach the computer to recognize a human being going up and smashing a car window. And actually, there's billions of ways that could happen. So what you do is you teach the machine to look for the things that don't usually happen.
Right.
So somebody walking up to a car and banging their hand against it, that doesn't happen very often in a car park. That's an anomaly. You can teach the machine to spot those anomalies. Or another thing, you can teach machines language. You can get them to understand how sentences work. You can get them to understand what words mean. You can get them to understand how those words get strung together. So it can start to make decisions based on what it's learned and the corpus of knowledge that it's got.
Haven't we got that already? Haven't I got Siri on my phone? I can ask it to play music, find my way to your building and things like that. Isn't that the same thing?
Siri and all of the chatbots and all those other things are fantastic examples of artificial intelligence.
Okay.
So you've already got that right, sitting around you. What it's becoming is becoming smarter and smarter and smarter. It's starting to predict. So instead of you telling it you wanted to play music, it go, Derek, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We usually play music at this time. Do you want me to play you something?
Okay.
So it starts to predict in the same way as you and I would start to think ahead and predict what might be happening.
Now, I was privileged to MC a conference on Friday when the Chancellor of the Exchequer was there, and he said that white vans will be not in existence in 20 years' time. It won't be a white van, like there's no shorthand typists now, but those jobs will be taken up by other jobs. I was just trying to get my head around how a white van will get loaded and take it to places. Will that happen?
Yes. So autonomous vehicles, they can navigate their way around a city. They can decide the optimum route to go from point A to point B. They can decide which parcels need to be delivered at which particular place. They don't need somebody to drive that vehicle. And they can recognize the threats and the dangers. They can recognize what route to go to get somewhere. So all of those things they can do today.
Hang on a minute, they got to park on a double yellow line, let's say, and then deliver that parcel with no one there into your building here. How are they going to do that?
Well, so there's a patent that exists, there's a lorry that's been built, and in the back of it, it has hundreds of small autonomous vehicles. Drives to the centre of a town, the back of the lorry opens up, little autonomous vehicles come out, navigate their way around, go up to your front door, and you get a text saying your delivery is at the front door. You open the front door, the top of the machine pops open, and you take your delivery out. That exists today. That's not science fiction. That's what exists today.
Okay, so Tesco Home Delivery and Sainsbury's and all that stuff, is that all going artificial?
There's no reason why it can't.
Yeah, very shortly.
And the same with how do you take the things from the shelves in the warehouse to put them into the packed pallets to be taken out to your home. All of that can be done with machinery, with technology, with robots, artificially intelligent robots.
So is that drones and Amazon, is that a reality as well? We're really going to have drones delivering things?
Yeah, well, there's already a city in continental Europe where if you have a heart attack, the defibrillator arrives by drone.
Wow.
You may have seen on the news last weekend about the police force in the southwest of the UK. Actually, they're now replacing helicopters with drones. Helicopter costs £800 an hour to be in the air. A little drone costs a fraction of that. There's even a patent that I think it's Amazon has got for a little tiny drone that sits on the shoulder of the police officer and it's voice activated. So the police officer arrives at an incident and he says, she says the key words, the little drone takes off, goes a few hundred feet into the air and provides a picture of the entire scene. That exists today. That's not, again, science fiction. So these sorts of things are beginning to happen. There are 4.7 million delivery drivers in North America. Potentially those 4.7 million delivery drivers will not be driving lorries anymore.
I think there's two things I want to ask you about. Let's do the first one, which is jobs. What's going to happen to jobs? And the second one is security and risk and cyber attacks on all this. So let's take the jobs thing first. How are we going to replace all these jobs and keep everybody happy? We've seen a trend towards left-wing and right-wing and movements in elections recently. What's going to be the job situation?
So first of all, an apology. I'm an unreserved optimist.
Okay, good.
I see that this technology is actually going to create a whole series of new jobs, a whole
Fantastic.
Series of new ways of working. It's going to start solving some of society's big problems. It has the potential to create this world of abundance.
How?
How does it do that? It doesn't come without some potential consequences, and I'm not saying that it's perfection, but the opportunity for these new jobs to come into play. The idea of people being carers, for example. If you imagine the pain and anguish you have to go to care for somebody who's not well, particularly an elderly relative not well, a lot of those jobs are particularly distasteful. Imagine if you can get machines to do that, and you can spend your time, it's not releasing any of your time, but you could spend the time you'd otherwise do those rather unpleasant mundane tasks, you could spend your time talking to that person. So the carer job becomes one of companionship rather than one of changing bedpans.
Yeah, okay.
Whole range of new ways of producing food. Suddenly we can start to release these vast tracts of land that are devoted to farming. We can produce food in different ways. Imagine what we could do with that land.
How can we provide food in different ways?
We can 3D print meat now.
Now come on, now you're pulling my leg.
I'm not pulling your leg, that exists. You can 3D print meat. You can have, imagine you've got a farm sitting in the middle of a huge conurbation in a tower block, with levels all the way down, with food being grown on each one of those levels. And the water that starts at the top of the building slowly trickles down, feeding the plants all the way down to the bottom of the building. You've got no transport costs because your supermarket, where people go and buy their food, is at the bottom of the building. And those are the sorts of things this new technology is allowing us to do. One of the other great things I love is you think of energy. Everybody says energy is the thing that limits us. The cost of renewable energy, solar power, is now below the cost of a unit of power created through fossil fuels. That's kind of happened now. Suddenly that's happened. Suddenly we've got this abundant, free energy that we can suddenly deploy on doing all the things that we wanted to do that we thought were governed by our inability to produce enough energy.
that's going to change a few geopolitical things in the Middle East as well, isn't it?
It absolutely is, yeah. You know, look what's going on at the moment. You know, this discussion about, you know, who's got the LPG versus who's got the oil. A bit of a conversation going on around that.
Well, not. I don't want to date this this audio because people might be listening to this in a couple of years' time. But we are in 2017. Is that why Qatar and Saudi Arabia have fallen out, or is that a different issue?
I wouldn't want to pretend, but I'm guessing that's somewhere in the back.
Yeah. No, it certainly sounds like it. Let's turn to risk, because risk is a big thing at the moment, isn't it? Instability everywhere with cyber attacks. We understand this all sounds like it's prone to being blown up by a cyber attack. What's your take on that?
Well, we've got to fix that problem. There's no question that the more connected we become, the more devices we've got, the greater the risk that we take. We expose ourselves even more. We expose our data. We expose bad actors coming in and taking control of things. So that's a problem that we've got to crack. This technology will not survive and thrive unless we can crack that particular problem. There's no one silver bullet that sits out there. It is about the same kinds of security that 300 or 400 years ago we were introducing physical security for money. And imagine all the time and effort that went into creating that physical security. We've got to do exactly the same in the cyber world.
GCHQ are working on that, we hope.
I'm sure they are.
Okay. Well, this all sounds a bit sort of scary, a bit Doctor Who-ish or sci-fi or whatever we want to call it, doesn't it?
A man of your vintage, Derek, would remember the Jetsons, which was a 1950s, and it went through to the 60s as well, television series, cartoon series from America. And it was kind of, you know, this crazy space world where, you know, robot butler, flying cars, 3D printed food, all of the things, a communication device on your wrist that showed the picture of the person you were talking to and the picture, your picture went the other way. All the sort of imagining the unimaginable. It was a cartoon series, and everything that was in that unimaginable or that imaginable but unexpected, we're never going to get there kind of world, all of that has now come to pass, apart from flying cars.
Well, believe it or not, Michael, I'm far too young to remember that. I only remember the Flintstones and Tom and Jerry, I don't remember that being in there. So cyber security is a serious risk, but what you're saying is it's only the same risks we've run with other issues as the world's developed and as we've made progress.
The biggest challenge, though, is, of course, the systemic risk is huge, because you only need one entry point and suddenly you could steal, we've had our first $1 billion robbery. It was a bank in Asia, and somebody hacked into it and stole $1 billion. There was another example where somebody hacked into the ATM system of the banks in the US, and all the ATM machines in New York punted out $1,000. And they had hundreds of people literally with backpacks going around and taking $1,000 out of every ATM machine.
Wow.
So you only need one entry point and you can make this huge difference. You can steal so much more. Whereas in the past, you could go up and you could sort of knock somebody on the head and maybe get a couple hundred dollars. Now you could steal $1 billion. Mm. So that's the risk. That's why you've got to make it secure.
What's the most vulnerable? The power situation, the nuclear plants, or what do you think?
I don't know. No. I wouldn't like to speculate. You know, I think we've got to recognize that every connected device in our homes, in society, is somehow vulnerable. That's where we've got to put the effort and time into to protecting that. So I put cybersecurity up there as one of the principal issues that we've got to tackle. If this technology that's going to give us abundance and a fantastic life, if that's going to be successful, we've got to put cybersecurity up there at the top.
You're beginning to make me think that maybe I should keep sheep in my garden and grow a few vegetables, actually, just in case. But
that might be a good call.
But you're a positive man. So
I'm a positive man. I think we'll get it right.
Go there.
You know, you've got some of the smartest people on the planet beginning to take that debate forward. You've got Stephen Hawking, you've got Elon Musk. He was just recently talking about responsibility and responsible AI, and governments have got to intervene and be part of that discussion so that we have some control over this genie that we've let out of the bottle. But the fact that there's some challenges around the genie doesn't mean we should put the genie back in the bottle.
I don't think we can we?
I don't think we can.
Just turning to one last subject before we finish this this interview is education. We met at Handy Management College a few years ago on the strategic management course, and we've stayed in touch ever since. Education's changing very fast. People still like to be in the room with someone that really knows what they're talking about, has a three-dimensional effect. But on the other hand, what should people be studying now as we go forward, as they leave university and take a PhD or whatever? What's the things that are really going to make a difference?
So I'll respond to that question in a couple of ways. First of all, how should we be educating people? And I think we have a unique opportunity to change the way we educate. If you imagine the classroom, hundreds, thousands, millions of children sitting in a classroom, hearing what potentially could be quite a dull lecture, not terribly excited, not terribly interested. Now, some people will draw a lot from that, but many, many won't. Many, many would like their education a different way. We have the opportunity to customise education for everybody. You, Derek, might want to sit in that classroom and see the lecturer talking. I might be happier sitting at home and seeing exactly the same thing on my screen or reading a book. I might want to do the same exams as you, though, but I don't want to sit in a room somewhere doing that exam. I'd much rather do it sitting at home. All of those things we can now accommodate. So we've got customizable education. We can map what you need and the way you need it and deliver that to you in a highly personalized way. In the same way as you have a trainer made to your particular specifications, in 48 hours you can get a trainer that you've designed which is just professional to you. You can now get education in that way. So suddenly we can open up all of that education. The best courses from the best universities in the United States are now available for free to anybody in the world.
Is that right?
Yep. So you can do whatever education course for a tiny payment, $90 or something, you can sit the very best courses. You can sit the exams as well. And how do they know you're not cheating? Because what they do is they do a little test to work out how you press the keys. So you create a digital fingerprint and they know if it's you pressing the keys or not to work out when you do the exams. How clever is that, right? So you can have education from the very, very best education sources and you could decide. And yes, of course, there's a need for groups of people to come together, and education is so much more than just learning about mathematics or science or whatever. It's also about that kind of growing experience, etc., etc., etc. You can replicate that. So we need to think about a different way of delivering education, and we can exploit all of these wonderful technologies that exist. What should people be learning? Again, I can't pretend for a second I know what the right job will be in 25 years' time. And remember, people in university now are being educated to do jobs that we've got no idea what those jobs will be in 25 years' time. What would I say? What are the key skills? Well, we've got to teach our children to be agile in the way they think. We've got to teach them to be confident. We've got to teach them to embrace change and not be frightened of it. And we've got to teach them how to collaborate. And that's not just collaborating with other people. And that's a real skill, how you collaborate. And I know it's very dear to you, how you negotiate with people, massively important. So how you do that, and you do that on a global scale now. I've got a young son. You know, he's got between 800 and 1,000 friends on Facebook. He's probably only ever met 30 of them. It's the reality. So we've got to teach people how to collaborate. And that's not just collaborating with other people, but how you collaborate with a machine. Mm. And I'm hoping you're scratching your head at this point and saying, well, how do you collaborate with a machine? Machines just do what we tell them, right? Well, in the new world, the machine will think for itself. You'll ask it a question, it will respond. You'll collaborate. You'll have a dialogue. It's not like using a calculator anymore.
So if the Harvard Business School, the best university in the world for business or whatever, courses are going to be on the web for £90, how on earth are they going to get somebody to go to Harvard and pay $100,000 for an MBA?
Because the education experience is so much more than just doing the course.
Okay.
And I think it is that collaboration piece. So we'll definitely need those august institutions and, you know, some of the very best, like Harvard, like Cambridge, like wherever. We will need those institutions, absolutely, to bring people together. It's not the only way of educating.
Sure.
But if you're going to educate a billion people in Africa, it's quite hard to put a billion people through Harvard. But why should the benefit of that kind of education experience, why should that be denied to that group?
And I guess we're sitting here because we met on a three-week course at Henley Management College, which was sponsored by our employers at the time. And we learned a tremendous amount, and we've stayed in contact and stayed friends ever since. Michael Randell, thank you very much for that, and thanks for your time. So in this podcast, we've talked about artificial intelligence. I've been very surprised with some of the things that are taking place. Cybersecurity is going to be a huge issue. The politicians are going to have their hands busy on dealing with this, and there are all sorts of issues that we're going to have to get to grips with regulation. But again, education is crucial. The more we learn, the more we earn, and going forward, it's vital that people know as much as they can about these issues, which are going to change our lives substantially. Michael, thanks very much for your time, and I think maybe we need to meet up another time and do another podcast in maybe a year or two's time. Are you up for that?
Up for that, of course.
Thanks very much indeed.